All right, we're holding on your test armored bays 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins Bahatit. We're talking about davening for rain to come. So in this connection, the Gemara tells a story about a time when not only there was a nest that rain fell, but also another nest as well, as we'll see. Tana Rabbanan, Pamachas Olu Ko Yisrael L'Regel Yerushalayim. One time, all the Jewish people came on Aliyah L'Regel to Yerushalayim. So this is while the second Beis Mikdash was still standing. V'lo Hayu Lahem Mayim L'Shtos, and they didn't have enough water. They didn't have enough water to drink. The pastures, it would be because it hadn't rained. Although Ben Yehoyada wants to say that maybe what it is maybe the Gemara is implying that there was an unusually large number of people, or that they stayed for an unusually long amount of time. They came much before the Yom Tov, unlike usual, and therefore even if there had been a normally rainy year, there still would have been a shortage of water. Whatever the case, they had a shortage of water. Holach Nakdimin Ben Gurion Eitzel Odein Echad. So Nakdimin Ben Gurion, who was, Rashi just says, Osher Gadol Hoya, he was a very rich person, which we have the Gemara in Gittin, in the Agadah about the Churban over there, it mentions that he was one of the three rich people, the three really rich people in Yerushalayim right before the Churban, where they had enough resources to be able to supply the city of Yerushalayim with its needs during a siege of 21 years, etc. Anyway, so he was very rich. So he went to a certain Odin, actually really the word is actually supposed to be Hegmon. The censors changed it because at some point they started using the word Hegmon to refer to a Christian bishop. And so I guess the censors didn't like that term. Whatever the case, he went to a Roman nobleman who lived in that area. Omaloi tells him, Halveni shtem estri mayonis mayim lo'ole regolin. Lend me 12 springs of water that we can use to give water to the ole regol. I will return to you 12 springs of water, meaning 12 springs full of water. So Rashi explained, in other words, that these springs were very slow springs. If everybody drinks from the water of those springs, they're going to stay empty for a long time until rain refills them. Normally, you have a spring about the same amount you take out from it is the amount that it gushes forth. But here, these were very slow springs, so therefore it would take a while for them to refill unless there was rain which would refill them. So he's saying, I'll return you 12 full springs of water. In other words, that it'll rain by such and such a date. And if I don't give you back the water, then I'll give you 12 kicker of silver, which would be a huge amount of money. Marshar explained that he was relying on, he said, 12 wells of water in the schus of the 12 Shvatim. We actually have in Tfilas Geshem, we have the last stanza that we say over there, Zchor Shnei Mosa Shvatim She'evata B'Gizras Mayim, that we ask the Tzidkom in the schus of the Tzidkos of the 12 Shvatim, Choyin Chashras Moyim, give us plentiful rain. So Nakdimin was banking on that. And then he's saying, if it happens that Hashem doesn't accept the Rishchosim, then fine, then there'll be a kapara for them, and I'll give 12 kicker of silver instead. Okay. The Kavah Loizman, and they set up a certain date. By such and such a date, I have to return. There either has to be the springs are refilled that it rained, or that I'm going to pay you the 12 kicker. Kivinchi Giazman Vala Yodu Shomim, the time the day came, rain hadn't fallen yet. So Bashachris Shalachloi, so already in the morning of the date, the Roman nobleman sent Nachdimin Ben Gurion a message, Shagurli Oimai My Mos, Sheshli Biyodcha. Either give me the water or give me the money that you owe me. Shalachloi, and Nachdimin sent back to him, Adayin Yeshli Zman. I still have time. Kolayim Kolay Shalihu, the whole day belongs to me. Marsha explains an interesting point. He said that he's going to pay him ad until such and such a day. And whenever you have the word ad, you always have the question, is it ad v'ad b'chlal or ad v'lo yad b'chlal? Is the date itself that's mentioned part of the deadline or not? If they had said, for example, that he's going to pay him, let's say, by Aleph Tavis, say, is it that he has to pay him before Aleph Tavis or by the end of Aleph Tavis? So the Goy took the view that it means up to and not including. So he's saying, listen, according to you Jews, your days actually begin the night before. By rights, according to your way of doing things, Nakdimin, Already last night, you should have owed me. But fine, I'll be a nice guy. According to us Goyim, he's saying, we go according to the day begins in the morning. So fine, already the morning then, you already owe me. And Nachdiman tells him, no, ad va'ad v'chlal, the whole day belongs to me as well. V'tzarayim shavachloi, so in the afternoon, the Roman sent back a message, shagoli oimayim oimoyis yeshli biyadcha, water or money, shavachloi adayin yeshli shoris b'yoyim. And Nachdiman tells him, I still have time during the day. Marsha says, the Goy is saying, okay, so you're saying that you have one way of understanding ad, I have a different way. Fine, then, we'll split the difference. Mom and Amutal will suffer chokin. So half the day belongs to me and half belongs to you, but your day, your part is already over. And Nachdiman tells him, no, ad va'ad v'chlal means just that. I have the entire day. And mincha time, which is already 9 hours plus into the day, tells him, send me the water or give me the water or the money. He says, no, I still have until the actual end of the day. At that point, that Odin or Hegmon, whatever, this Goyish nobleman is laughing at him, is mocking him. He says, the whole year rain hasn't fallen. What is this Nachdiman think that in the next hour or two, all of a sudden it's going to rain? So he realized, in other words, definitely the money is pretty much in my hands already. So he went into the bathhouse, very happy that he's going to bathe and prepare himself for a big party. And Marsha explains that the fact that he went to the bathhouse was actually a way of mocking the Jewish people even further. Look at that. They had a shortage of water. Me, I have enough water even to go and bathe. Meanwhile, as this hegmon, as this goy is going happily into the bathhouse, Nachdiman went into the Beis Hamikdash very sad. He wrapped himself in his talus, and he stood there davening. Why he went to the Beis Hamikdash, by the way, Dafka, I mean, of course, that's a natural place to daven, but still, why not any other shul? Beni Hoyoda actually says, when you think about it, that's where Nisuch HaMayim took place with tremendous simcha. So therefore, he's saying, now instead, this Goy is going to have the simcha because he's getting money instead of his water. So therefore, the Beis Hamikdash is an appropriate place to daven for Hashem to reverse that Zera. He says, Ribono Shel Olam, Goliv Yadua Lefanecha, it's well known and revealed before you. I didn't do this whole thing to begin with to go and make the deal with the Goy for my own honor. I didn't do it for the honor of my father's house, of my family. I did it for your cover. And there should be plenty of water for the Oler Regal. So in other words, please vindicate me and don't make that I should have to pay all that money to the goy. Miyad niskashu shamayim ba'ovim. Right away, the heavens were covered up with clouds. The yodug shamim, and it started raining. And it was so dark with the clouds that, as we're going to see, people thought the sun had set already. So the yodug shamim, and it started raining. Ad shenismalo shteimes yimayinus mayim, until the 12 springs were refilled. Vahisiru, and they're even fuller than they were when Nachdiman first made the deal with the goy. So now, ad sheyotza odin mibeis hamechutz, while the goy, as the goy was coming out of the bathhouse, Nachdiman ben Gurion, yotza mibeis hamechutz. Meanwhile, Nachdiman ben Gurion is coming out of the Beis Hamikdash. Kshepogu zebazeh, they met up with each other on the street. Omar lois, and Nachdiman says, look at that. Now you have to pay me extra for the extra water that you have. He didn't mean seriously, Mephoshim say. He was just like you were making fun of me before, so now it's my turn to make a little fun of you. He didn't seriously mean that the guy should owe him for the extra water, because of course that wasn't part of the deal. But the guy says, look, I know good and well that Hashem didn't stir up the whole world and bring rain when there hadn't been rain all of a sudden, when there hadn't been rain for months, and all of a sudden Hashem brought it just for your sake. Still, I have an excuse against you, that I can take my money away from you, because the sun has already set. Now that this rain has fallen, it fell during my time. So your deadline is already over, and therefore you still owe me the money regardless. Which Marsha says, in keeping with what we were saying before, about the day and the night, and about what, whether ad va'ad v'chlal, the goy is saying to Nachdiman, listen, according to you, where your days begin the night before, then it's already the next day. according to me, fine, the night belongs after the day, but nevertheless, I held ad v'loy ad v'chlal to begin with. So already you're 24 hours past the date. So either way, whether according to you or whether according to me, so fine, Hashem vindicated you by showing that he accepts your tefillah. But nevertheless, it's still already too late. It's past the deadline. And Marsha says also, so what would be the point of Hashem vindicating? And the point is the goy is saying, okay, so fine. From now on, you guys will have plenty of water for your oiler regal, but it doesn't help this time. So Nakdimin went back to the Beis HaMikdash, again, he wrapped himself up and started davening. And he says, Rebbeinu Shleilam, hoida sheyesh lecha ahuvim ba'olam acha. Show, make it known that you have beloved ones in your world. In other words, vindicate me in a way that the goy can't even make these excuses and mock the nest and say that the nest is not a complete one. Show that that's not so. Miyad nispazra of him, right away the clouds scattered, the zorcha achama, and the sun shone. So it was still daylight. So therefore, the goy's argument has no validity. So now the goyish nobleman says to Nakdimin, ilu loy nikdira hachama, if the sun hadn't nikdira, Rashi says nikdira means shone. The word makdir means like to pierce through. So if the sun hadn't pierced through, then I would have had a valid argument against you that I would be able to get my money from you. Or at least, again, maybe he wouldn't be able to prove it in Beis Din or in a Goyish court or something, but at least that he'd have reason to be able to belittle and mock the nest. Now he doesn't even have that. So Tana, in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Loi Nakdimen Shmoy, his real name wasn't Nakdimen, Ela Buni Shmoy. His real name was Buni. They called him that after that because the sun pierced and shone through because of him. Agoy Sabach says maybe the word is supposed to be like the sun moved up for him. In fact, there is some discussion actually. So what happened over here? If the Gemara is going to say now that he's one of three people in history that the sun stood still for them because it had to, because otherwise it Taka would have set while it was raining, and it was very late in the day. But is it that the sun stood still in the one place in the sky, and there in fact is a different girsa, not nikdira and not nikdima, but nokda, meloshin nikuda, it stayed in one place, or is it that it actually moved up, that it actually had set, and then Hashem made it unset and come up again? An interesting nafkamina of that is, if it already set, then in fact the goy has a point. Nakdimin really does owe him the money. So fine, Hashem made a nest, so he doesn't have to pay, but actually the Chassam Sofer wants to say, based on that, it comes out if we say that in fact the sun set and then Nikdima, it moved up and advanced in the sky and rose again, then it means that in a way, Nakdimin is in the wrong over here. He really should be paying the goy money. And he says a horrifying thing. He said there's a Gemara in Ksubas that tells about what happened after the Churban. The Gemara says that so Nakdimin and the other rich people of Yerushalayim lost all their wealth in the Churban, in the catastrophe of the Churban, they all lost their wealth. And the Gemara says over there that Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai was around leaving Yerushalayim with his Talmidim, and he saw a girl picking out little bits of grain out of the waste on the ground over there, and he realized that's Nakdimin Ben Gurion's daughter. She's reduced to that. So the Chassam Sofer says that's why, because ultimately there was Gezel HaGoy involved over here. And therefore, since the Eibishter judges tzaddikim strictly, so that's what ended up happening to Nakdimin and his family. Yeah, a strong thing about how careful you have to be, even how careful you have to be on Gezel HaGoy. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Shloshin Nikdima Lahen Chama Ba'avurim. There were three people for whom the sun stood still or moved up or whatever in their zchus. Moshe, V'Yoshua, V'Nakdimin Ben Gurion. So let's figure out where we know all those. This Gemara is also in Avodah Zarah. Tosfos mentions in Avodah Zarah. What about, you have other examples? Yaakov Avinu, it says, by Yizrach LeYashemesh, the sun rose early for him. Chizkiyahu, you have that the sun moved back 10 degrees or 10 hours, whatever, for him. So the answer is those were done in order to make up for a previous time when the sun set early. By Yaakov, you have it set early when he came to Har HaMoriah because he should sleep overnight there. Tzadik Zebol Beis Maloni, Vipotibol Evinah, Sasha made the sun set early. Rashi mentions it at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. And by Chizkiyahu also, it was to make up for the sun had set early when Ochaz died, so they wouldn't have a nice funeral for him because he was a Rasha. So those were just to make up for that. You were talking about where it wasn't to make up for a previous loss of time. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Bishlema Nachdimin Ben Gurion Gemara. Okay, Nachdimin Ben Gurion, we know the story from the Gemara that we just learned. Gemara literally means that we learned the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim. So fine, it's not written in Tanakh, of course. This is 400 years after Tanakh was over, but it's we know it, the Kabbalah. Yeshua Nami Kra, and Yeshua we know from a pasuk, Yichtiv, Vayidem Hashemesh V'yareach Amad B'gemer. You have during one of the battles against the Canaanim, where the Medrash said it was Erev Shabbos, and Yeshua is concerned they're not going to complete the battle by Shabbos, so he ordered the sun and the moon to stand still, and sure enough, Vayidem Hashemesh, the sun stood still, V'yareach Amad B'gemer, and the moon stopped. Ela Moshe Menolon, where do we know by Moshe that there was a stoppage of the sun? We learn it on Gzeira Shava from the word ochel that it says by Moshe and that it says by Yeshua. Ksiv hocha ochel teis pachtecha. By the war with Sichon, Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to begin making you fear be on all the nations. Uchtivasim ochel gadelcha by Yeshua. This is actually the pasuk ochel gadelcha is right before the splitting of the Yarden, but still before Hashem explained that it's meant to be that all the following nisim, including the greatest nes of all, the stopping of the sun, is all going to be I'm going to begin to make you great. So it uses the same word ochel by both of them. So we see, in other words, that there was something similar. So since by Yeshua, we know that there was the ultimate, the greatest nest, that the sun stood still, therefore that implies that by Moshe Rabbeinu also you had that. By the war with Sichon, or there's some sources where it says by the war with Og. Rav Shmuel Manachmeni, Omo Asya Taste. Rav Shmuel Manachmeni says, I have a different Gzeira Shava on the word Taste, that it says in both places. Ksivacha Ochel Taste Pachtacha. Hashem says over here to Moshe, I will start to place, to literally taste means to give, melosh nasan, but I will place, so I will give your fear on all the goyim. Uchtivasim b'yem taste Hashem as Amori. By that battle, on the day that Hashem gave over the Amori into the Jewish people's hands, is when the sun stood still. So he prefers that, because after all, the word taste is directly there in connection with that battle, as opposed to, again, ochel is by an earlier ness. Rabbi Yechanan, Omar Rabbi Yechanan said, you don't need any of these Gzeira Shavas. Ask me Gufei Dikra. You see it from the actual pasuk that Hashem continues telling Moshe. He says, I'm going to make everybody fear you. Asher Yishmo Unshim Acha. They will all hear of your report of what happened. The Rogzu V'cholum V'ponecha. And they will tremble and be fearful from before you. So Amasai, Rogs of Cholon with Panacha, when is everybody going to be fearful and tremble before Moshe? Beshasha Nikhtam Alecham Ala Moshe, when the sun stops for him, that everybody sees that he can control not only what's going here on earth, but also that Hashem controls on his behalf what happens in heaven. So therefore, then everybody's going to fear him. So we see that that's what happened for Moshe as well. Okay, so then we're saying, so Nachdim and Ben-Gurion belongs to that exclusive club as well. Next, we said in the Mishnah, we said you have a case where one particular city it didn't rain on, and in the surrounding cities it did, and so we said that particular city has to fast and do hasra, which we said means blowing shofar and or saying anenu, and the surrounding cities we had machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva what they do. So and the Mishnah quoted in that connection a pasuk. The Navi says to the Jewish people, I want to tell you the kind of things Hashem has been doing to get your attention, so you'll do tshuva, but you're not paying attention. Hashem says, the Navi says in Hashem's name, I made it rain on one city, and I didn't make it rain on a different city. And then he continues, one particular area of ground was rained on, and the one that wasn't rained on, the one that didn't rain on became dried up. Rashi, by the way, mentions a side point over here. The word tamtir aleha, what's the tough, he says, refers to the cloud. The cloud can be sometimes referred to b'loshon nekeva. So tamtir means that she, meaning it, the cloud, will rain on it or won't rain on it. Anyway. So Omar of Yehuda, Omar Rabbah, stay in the klala. In the context of the pasuk, both of those parts are meant as a klala. That you have, there's the one place that gets rain, as we learned in the first parak, on Daf Bav, it means it's going to get too much rain, and it's going to get flooded. And then you have the one that doesn't get rain at all, and they're going to dry up. So even though it sounds like one of them is doing well and the other one not, really the Navi is telling us that both of them actually were having trouble. One too much rain where it was flooding, one too little, and you still haven't paid attention and done tshuva. In the Mishnah, by the way, it's not necessarily like that. In the Mishnah, we're talking about the surrounding cities, only after to be Mis'anis or only Masrius, implying that they're doing better. So you have there's a few different distinctions. Then you have there's the case that we're talking about over here where one has a drought and the other one is flooding. You have another one where the one has a drought and the other ones have a normal amount of rain, where they're fine. They have to be Mis'anis or Masrius, but not both, because they have to be concerned it might spread to them, or as Rashi said on the Mishnah, because people from the affected city are going to go buy from them and there's going to be a shortage in that city. And then you have an area that then you have something that's said in the Gemara on Daf Bav, where you have one area has somewhat less rain than normal and the other ones have normal amounts, then nobody has to really do anything because it's not really, then it shows it's not a particularly serious gzeira. Since we're mentioning something where you have both things in a pasuk for a klala, even though on the face of it, it meant that one of them was good and one of them not. So now the Gemara digresses to talk about some things in Pesukim where the other way around. It seems the pasuk is saying something very negative and horrible, but really there's a good message in it. So in Eicha, you have the pasuk, Hoysa Yerushalayim l'nida b'nehem. Yerushalayim was like a nida among the surrounding nations. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav l'gbracha. It means that the comparison to a nida is a bracha. Kenida, it means that the Jewish people are like a nida. Man nida yesh laheter, just like a nida can become mutter. All she has to do is finish her 7 days and go to the mikveh. Af Yerushalayim yesh la takana, the same way Yerushalayim is not permanently gone, that it has a takana, it will be fixed up. In fact, there's an explanation. That's why the comparison is to a nida rather than a zava. Daraisa, we know that a nida, there's no extra time, you have to wait. As soon, even if she's bleeding the entire 7 days, she can go to the mikveh that night, as opposed to a zava, you always need at least one day in between. The point is, in other words, that the geula, mitzvah shlema, can come at a moment's notice. Similarly, when it says Udi and Eicha, the first pasuk, Hoysa ka'almana, Yerushalayim and the Jewish people were like a widow, Amar Yehuda also livracha. It means that that's a bracha, and there's a hidden bracha in it. Ke'almana, v'loy almana mamish. The Jewish people are not literally a widow, but like a widow. The Jewish people are like a woman whose husband went overseas. The daite lachs her aleha, but he plans to return to her. So the same way Hashem is going to return to the Jewish people. Marshoin Sanhedrin, the Gemara also mentions this over there. Marsha over there explains the voters like this. The goyim have their hashpa through their 70 sarim. And what happens? The Chazal tell us that when a nation is going to be destroyed, first their Malach and Shemayim is destroyed and defeated, and then it follows them. So therefore, that's it. Once that Malach is gone, then they're goners too. We don't get our Hashpah through Malachim. We get it directly from Hashem. And Hashem continues to exist. Therefore, there's always going to be Hashem is going to return to us. There is also a beautiful vote on it also in the Sefer Taimer Dekra from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He says also, you have a Gemara in Ksubos that says the halacha, if a husband leaves town, so he leaves his wife at home, Beis Din does not have the responsibility to go and say, well, he left his wife without food, we better go start selling some of his property at public auction or whatever in order to raise money for her food. No, because we say, Einod maniach chazaka, Einod maniach has Beis Reifon. We have a chazaka, he's not going to leave his house completely empty. He must have left some food over there for her to be able to live off of while he's away. The same way, in other words, when we're saying that the Jewish people are like, we Jewish people are ke'isha, shaholach bailal, and binasayam, it means Hashem never left us empty. We always have chachamim, we always have tzaddikim, we always have people to lead us throughout all the time. You have the famous story in that connection, Shmuel Sipurim, about the family, the Hasofer family in Tasmania, where they're thinking to themselves, you know, the woman over there, Mrs. Hasofer, is reading the Bible and realizing in every generation there's always been a leader of the Jewish people. There has to be a leader in our generation. I want him to send us somebody here in Tasmania. And then one day the Rebbe calls up Chaim Gutnick and tells him to go to Tasmania without telling him why, and he finds him over there, and the rest, as they say, is history. So that's an example of this kind of thing, that the Eibishter didn't leave us empty. Onward, another one, a pasuk in Malachi says, "V'gamani nosati eschem nivzim ushvalim." Hashem says through the Navi, I have made you mocked and low down. In other words, that the Jewish people are treated very lowly by the goyim. But Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the bracha. But Rabbi Yehuda says there's a bracha in that. Deloy moik miminan, loy reishe nahari, veloy gziri pati. This way, the goyim don't appoint us as reishe nahari, literally means the heads of rivers, means people who are responsible to collect toll when people travel on the rivers, or gziri pati, which means soldiers or police. So Marsha explains those jobs in and of themselves are really very degrading jobs. But what happens is the Goyish rulers think of us as relatively important. So therefore, they figure those jobs are beneath our dignity. But really what it is if we were given those jobs, first of all, it would be beneath our dignity. But second of all, what would happen is the rank and file Goyim would hate us. Nobody likes tax collectors. Nobody likes the police. So like this, it spares us that this way the Goyish rulers themselves decide to themselves, they figure the common Goyish populace thinks of us as very lowly people. If they appoint us as tax collectors or toll collectors, whatever, or police, the Goyim are not going to listen to us anyway. Therefore, they avoid appointing us. But that way, the bracha is we don't get appointed to degrading jobs like that. Another one, the Pasuk says, part of a nevuah to Yeravam about what's going to happen to the Jewish people because of the egle hazahav and the other averus that he brought into Eretz Yisrael. The Pasuk says, "V'hikra Hashem es Yisrael, achi ashiloni," says a nevuah, Hashem will strike the Jewish people, kasha yonod hakone b'mayim, like a reed moves in the water. So what does that mean? Amar of Yehuda Amar Nav, also the bracha. It means that there's a bracha hidden in that klala. And in what way is there a bracha? The Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yonason, my dichtiv, what does it mean? Let's start with by introducing another pasuk from Mishlei. Ne'emonim pitz'ei oyhev, the wounds of a beloved one are faithful. In other words, they're faithful to do their job. When a beloved one is wounding you, he's doing it for a good reason in order to get you to do the right thing. V'na'toros neshikos soine, the kisses of an enemy are not toros. So what's not Torah? Rashi brings two explanations. One is that it means they're the other way around, so they're the opposite of good and kisses. A second explanation, Rashi says, means like they're overwhelming, like you feel they're too much, like they're overbearing, kind of. Tosfos brings both of those explanations and says a third one. When you have two people who were friends, the first part of the pasuk, Ne'amonim pitzei oyhev, means if you had two people who were friends and now they became enemies, so now their enmity is really a true one because they were friends before, so now it went minakotze alakotze. On the other hand, when you have two former enemies that make peace together, then v'natoreis, then their kisses are natoreis. They're strong. In other words, natoreis meloshen strong and permanent because you have it's a yisru na'or metoich ha'choshech. In other words, So what does that mean? Tova klola shekila lach. So in other words, the pasuk is contrasting when you have a beloved one who hurts you versus an enemy who kisses you. You're better off with the first than with the second. So what does that mean? The klala that he cursed the Jewish people is really better. Is better than the klala that Bilam HaRasha was an enemy of the Jewish people. Blessed him with. So you would say, what do you mean? A bracha is better than a curse. But let's analyze their curse and their bracha carefully, and we'll see. Achia Shiloni killam bekana. When Achia Shiloni cursed in Hashem's name the Jewish people, he compared them to a reed. So let's consider. A kone, a reed, like reeds or bamboo or papyrus or whatever, such plants, they grow in a watery area. The gizai machlif, the stem of them always regenerates. Even if you cut them down, the stem regrows. The shosh of merubin, and they have lots of strong roots. Even if all of the winds in the world go and blow on that reed, they don't move it from its place. The reed sways back and forth in the wind, but as soon as the wind calms down, the reed is still there, standing where it was before. So in other words, the point is that the Navi, even though he's saying the Jewish people are going to be buffeted back and forth by tremendous storms and winds, nevertheless, they're still going to be standing at the end of it. On the other hand, Aval Bilam HaRosha Berchan Be'erez. But Bilam HaRosha blessed the Jewish people, but he used the metaphor of a cedar tree. Shenema Ka'arozim Ale Moyim, as he says, he compares them to cedar trees by the water. So Ma Erez Ze'ena Oimre B'makam Mayim. Now a cedar tree does not necessarily stand in a watery area. Now, of course, the pasuk does say Ale Moyim. Rashi and Tosfos both say that's not Bilam himself. We know that Bilam himself wanted to curse the Jewish people, and Hashem forced him. Hashem sent a malach to make him say whatever he has to say. So he only said Ka'arozim. The malach forced him to add the words, or the malach answered back with the words Alei Moyim. You want to compare them to cedars, at least you have to add that they're like cedars by the water. But Bilam himself didn't mean that comparison. As far as he's concerned, they could be like cedars in the middle of nowhere. So they don't. So in his bracha, in his own bracha, they're not standing in a place of water. The ein gizay machlif. Now a cedar tree does not the trunk does not regenerate. If you chop it down, then that's it. It's gone. The ein shoshav merubin. It doesn't have, relatively speaking, that many roots. Now it's true. Afilu kolaruchos. It's true that afilu kolaruchos shabaolam noshvis by ein mizisus oisim emkaymei. It's true that if the normal amount of winds blow on it, it's not going to move it from its place. But as soon as the south wind comes, which is a very strong, harsh wind, then it uproots the tree and then throws it down on its face, and that's the end of that tree. So therefore, in other words, Bilam was saying that the Jewish people may be strong for a long time like a tree, but eventually they're going to be defeated and destroyed, and that's going to be the end of them. Whereas so that's his bracha. So Oichmer Abracha was saying that that's the bracha. The kisses of an enemy are not toros; they're the opposite, or they're overbearing, or whatever. Meaning we're better off. We're better off in a way with Achi Ashiloni's klala.
I thought that Hashem made that all his brachas, all his curses should be brachas.
Well, yeah, that's the point. In other words, a part of that, Rashi and Tosfos are explaining, is that for example, Bilam wanted to, even if he's going to compare the Jewish people to something, he's going to compare them to the worst part, not the worst, but whatever, he's going to compare them in a way that there's going to be a hidden klala in it by saying, for example, Ka'arozim, with all this implication. But then the Malach forced him to say, or the Malach itself said, Alei Moyim, to take the sting out of that at least you should have, it should be an Erez that grows by water, and which at least has that advantage, that it's not going to dry up so quickly. But still, you have the rest of the implication of it, which Bilam meant. So fine, Vayafach Hashem l'kaklola l'vracha, of course. But nevertheless, we're talking about what Bilam himself meant, and what he was intending to say. V'loy oid, and continues the Gemara. Not only that, the kana has an advantage over the kana has an advantage over the eres. Elisha zocha kana little menukumus lichta by sefer Torah neviim uksuvim. A kana, a reed, has the schus that you take a reed from it and you use it to make a pen to write sefer Torah neviim and uksuvim. Ada yemazeh, by the way, sfardish sofrim use a pen made from a reed to write their sefer Torah, and whatever Ashkenazim over hundreds of years developed the minhag instead to use a feather. And there's actually some discussion among the poskim whether that's right based on Or Gemara, but that became the minhag. In other words, as opposed to, for example, a cedar tree, yeah, you can have it, can be used to build houses and furniture and whatnot, but eventually it may just get used as firewood. So that's the advantage of the kana that Achi Ashiloni uses in his metaphor. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, lo'olam yehei adam rach kana, a person should always be gentle and yielding like the reed. Like we just said, the reed bends back and forth with the wind and it doesn't get broken off. Va'al yehei kosha ke'erez, he shouldn't be hard and unyielding like the cedar tree. In other words, when a person says something inappropriate to him, for example, he should be flexible. He should be flexible about it. He should be gentle about it. He shouldn't be talking harshly to other people. And the Gemara tells in this connection a story. Maisa Shabbat Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon min Migdal Gdur. It happened that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was coming back from Migdal Gdur. On the side of here, it brings a different Gersa. It was Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Anyway, he was coming from Migdal Gdur, the name of a place. Mi Beis Rabbi. He was coming from the house of his Rebbe, where he had learned Torah. V'hoya Rochu v'alachamur. He's riding on a donkey. He was strolling, like walking along by the side of the riverbank. Rashi says he was a lismoyach. He was in a happy mood. The samach simply because also latayel means not just to walk; it means like to stroll. So the samach simcha gdola, and he's very happy that he learned a lot of Torah. But he said daita gasa olav. He was feeling a little bit proud of himself. Because he learned a lot of Torah. Nos nizdamen le odem echad shayim bechur b'yosef. Then he met up with a man who was very ugly. Now Rashi and Tosfos both bring that this may have been a Yohan Navi. And he's actually, the reason is in order to get him to not be so gas ruach. But so anyway, Omar lo shalom alacha, but he didn't know that he was a Yohan Navi, of course. Omar lo shalom alacha Rebbe. So the guy greets Rebbe Lazar or Rebbe Shimon Lazar and says shalom alacha Rebbe. And Rebbe Shimon Lazar or Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon did not answer him back. Now, why didn't he answer him back? Is first of all because we want to say that he saw on him that he's a very low. So there's a few reasons actually. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden says an interesting point. Maybe he thought that the guy is a shed, and you're not supposed to use a name of a shalom as a name of Hashem. You shouldn't use it in greeting a shed. But also, a couple of them, Farshim, Iyun Yaakov and Ben Yehoyada, talk about based on Gemaras and Midrashim and other places that there were places in those times where it was considered inappropriate for a lesser person to initiate the greeting with a greater person. You wait until the greater person acknowledges you and greets you, and then you respond. So here, where the guy is doing like that, then Rav Shimon Elazar thought that to be chutzpah. Thought that to be chutzpah. So Omalai, he says to him, Reka, you empty person, kama machur oisah ish, how ugly you are. Are all the other people of your city ugly like you? Now, how does Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon talk to a person that way? So Marsha says, first of all, that maybe actually he thought he was a Cushy. He was dark-skinned. He thought he was a Goy, actually. But a number of them are Farshim talk about, and we'll talk about shortly a Sicha in Chelet Tesvav, where the Rebbe addresses this story briefly. That the ugly, he saw that he was ugly, and again, he saw that he had initiated the greeting. He figured that the guy is ugly beruchnis. The outer ugliness of him also represents an ugliness beruchnis. So are all the other people of your city like you? And he meant also, in other words, the one explanation is he also meant, are all of them like you, chutzpen yachs like that, where they initiate a greeting as if like you're on an equal level. Amaloi, so the guy answers, any idea, I don't know whether all of them are ugly like me. Ella, but leich ve'emer le'uman sha'asani, go and tell the craftsman who made me, meaning Hashem, kama mechur klizeh sha'asisa, how ugly is this vessel that you made? So you have the different mephoshim that talk about that Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, whatever, is criticizing him for being a chutzpen yak. And the guy is recognizing, the guy is answering, actually. So first of all, by saying any idea, he's showing he's not such a chutzpen yak. He actually has chokhmah in him, where he says any idea on a question that he doesn't know the answer to. That's one of the marks of a chokham. Shiva drawn b'chokham, b'shiva b'goylam, b'shiva b'chokham. And one of them is that he says, I don't know, when he doesn't know. So therefore, so Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon now realized that he had done wrong. There's a sicha in Chelek Tesvav. The context of the sicha is that Rebbe is talking about how Avraham Avinu would force people to bench after they ate, and how do you force people to acknowledge a course? What kind of a thing is that? And B'seich HaDvarim, the Rebbe talks about this story over here. The vote being that so Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon recognized again that this guy really is ugly beruchnis, and he recognizes ad kadekach that it's not even recognizable on the guy that he's a bria, that he's even a creation of Hashem. So therefore, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon decides that the only way to deal with such a person is you got to do bitul. You got to speak to him harshly like that and make him like Avraham Avinu had to do sometimes to his guests, to tell them if you don't bench Hashem, they're gonna have to pay huge amounts of money, and then that would make him realize. But then immediately the guy answers with this answer, go tell the craftsman, meaning in other words, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon realizes if the guy was that close to being able to realize that right away, then I didn't have to use such a harsh method on him in the first place. I could have used a gentler approach. So therefore, so now that he found out, that he realized that he had done wrong, Yorad min hachamor, he got off the donkey, v'nishtateach lefanim, and he bowed down on the ground in front of him, v'amaloi na'anesi lecha. He says, I spoke too much against you. Mecholi, be mechol me for what I said. Amaloi, the guy says, any mechol lecha, I'm not going to be mechol you. Ad shetelech u'uman sha'asa'ani, until you go to the craftsman who made me. The emeloi, and tell him, kama mechor klizeh sha'asiso, how ugly is this keli that you made? So again, we said before that it may have been Rashi and Tosfos both say that it was Eliyahu HaNavi. So in that case, why is he Taka wants to make him realize that you can't behave that way. Hoya Matayo Achrav. So Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is continuing to walk behind him. Adchi Gia Le'iroi, until he came to his city. Yotzu b'nei ira l'kros. So when he came to his city, it can mean the city where the guy lived, it can mean the city where Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon lived. Anyway, Yotzu b'nei ira l'kros. So the people of the city came out to greet him. Shalom alecha, Rebbe, Rebbe, Mori, Mori. They're greeting him with Shalom aleichem. Amalaham, so the guy who was walking in front of Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon, because we're saying Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon was walking behind him, asking him mechila. So the guy asks them, "Lamiatim kodim Rebbe Rebbe, who are you calling that?" Amalaloi lezeshim tayelacharecha. They said the guy behind you. Amalaham, so he says to them, "Imzer Rebbe, if this is what you consider a Rebbe, al yiru kamoisi b'Yisrael. It should be that there should not be more like him among the Jewish people." People ask him, why, what's the matter? He tells them he did such and such to me. So they told him, it's true he did wrong. Nevertheless, be moichel him, because after all, he is a person who's great in Torah. So he tells them, fine, for your sake, I'll be moichel him. As long as he's not rugil, used to doing this kind of thing. So what do you mean, used to? And occasionally you are allowed to do such a thing? So Marsha explains that this Adam Mechur, Eliyahu HaNavi, as we're saying, was telling them to begin with, not that sometimes he can do this thing. It means, in other words, he shouldn't be rugil to be in a proud mood like that, that's going to lead him to do such a thing. To ever do such a thing would be also. So therefore, he should be careful. The Talmud Chacham, fine, is supposed to have shminis shebishminis, 1/8 of an eighth above a measure of gaiva. But as Rashi says in Sota, where it says it over there, in order that people will pay attention to what he says. But nevertheless, he's going to have to be very careful, this is Rebbe Elazar b'Rav Shimon, to not allow that to go beyond where it should, and not to be rugil, to be in a proud mood like that. In the Sicha, the Rebbe explains, rather, listen, once in a while, you do occasionally have the kind of person where you have to deal with him like in this harsh method that Rebbe Elazar b'Rav Shimon used in order to get him to recognize that he's a creature of Hashem. But nevertheless, you shouldn't be rugged to do that, because most people don't need that kind of drastic treatment. So the Gemara continues. Miyad nichnas Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon b'darash. Right away, Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon went into the Beis Medrash and darshin. What we said before, la olam yehei adam rach kakana. A person should always be gentle and flexible, like the reed. Ba'al yehei kosher ke'erez, and not harsh and not harsh and unyielding like the cedar tree, which can mean, in other words, so some of the Mephoshim say, he's saying that in praise of the other guy who was willing to be moichel him after all, so he was flexible like the reed. And another explanation is he's referring to the fact that I was, to begin with, inflexible, that I took the view, like we said before, from Iyun Yaakov and Ben Yehoyada, that he took the view that it was wrong for the guy to initiate the greeting first, because it's chutzpahdik. So he's saying, I shouldn't have been so inflexible about that. I should have realized different people in different places have different ways of doing things, and the guy didn't necessarily mean it as chutzpah. So a person should always be like that. And he continues, as we said before, therefore, because the reed is flexible, the kana had this chus, literally, and akumus, to take a pen from it, lichta be sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzas. Okay. The Mishnah continued, b'chein ir sheyesh ba devar ema poilas fula, the same way when you have a city where there's an epidemic or where there's a bunch of buildings collapsing. So then we also said that, so we said also that particular city fasts and does truas of shofar or anenu, and the other cities around it, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah whether they only fast or whether they only do masri. So tana rabbanan, we learn in a brisa, mapoilas sh'amru, when we're talking about buildings collapsing, brias v'loy ru'ois, it means that they're strong buildings, not that they're buildings that are weak anyway. And it has to be that they're not expected to fall, and then unexpectedly they're falling because of hurricanes or whatever, but not ones that were not expected to fall. And that's why the double expression. Hey Neil Brios, what are buildings that are healthy, that are intact? Hey Neil Shane and Ruyas Lipple. The pastor said means the ones that are not expected to fall anytime soon. Hey niu ru'uis, and what do we mean are the weak, or what are the weak buildings, the shaky buildings? Hey niu ru'uis lipple. The pashtos, they're the ones that are about to fall. So why the double expression? And the answer is loy tzricha the naflu machmas gov hayu. You can have where they're falling because they're very tall. In other words, you can have a wall which is solidly built, but it's very, very tall, and therefore the fact that a hurricane or something knocks it down is not so unexpected. So therefore, that wouldn't be reason enough to be considering it a disaster that they should be fasting and so forth for. So inami, the kaiman, aguda denara. Or another example, you could have a wall that itself was built strongly, but it's by the riverbank, and over time the riverbank erodes away, and therefore the ground under it erodes away, and the wall collapses. So again, in other words, the point is you can have a wall which is bria, which in and of itself was solidly built, but it was built too tall, and not strongly enough for its height, or that it was built on the bank of a river and therefore it falls. That's not the kind of thing when we're talking about when you have a mapolis that you're going to be fasting and then that we're going to be fasting and davening for. So the Gemara gives an example. For example, there was this case of a shaky wall that was in the Hadar. Deloy have a cholik Rav Shmuel Tosa. Rav and Shmuel, when they were in the Hadar, would never walk next to this wall. Even though it had already been standing there for 13 years and it still hadn't fallen down yet. So in other words, it wasn't a bria, it wasn't a healthy wall, it was shaky, but it had stayed up all these years. So by now they could have figured, you know what, then it looks like it's probably going to stay up for the indefinite future. Nevertheless, they wanted to be careful because you don't go in a mokum sakona, and therefore they wouldn't pass by it. But Yom Achad Ikler of Adar Ba'Av Avahasam, one time Rav Adar Ba'Av visited that area. Omale Shmuel Rav. So now Shmuel says to Rav, Nasi Maun Nakif. So when they're walking to wherever they're going and they need to pass by this area, so Shmuel says to Rav, let's go around that area like we usually do, not rather than going next to the wall. Omale, and Rav says, Loit Srichna Ha'idna, now we don't need it. The Ikr of Adar Ba'Av Ba'Hadon, because we have Rav Adar Ba'Av with us, the Nafish Schuse, where he has tremendous schusim, Veloy Mr. Pina, and therefore I'm not afraid of the wall falling, because his schus will save us that it's not going to fall Davka now. Tosfos points out that there was actually a later Rav Adar Ba'Av who was a Talmud of Rava, so evidently there were at least two Rav Adar Ba'Av. This is the first one. Another example of shaky walls like that, where something was saved by a nest. Rav Huna Havale Hahu Chamra. Rav Huna had, now it could be Chamra, which means wine, or it could mean Chamoro, which is a donkey. Anyway, whatever, he had that. Bahu Beisiriya. It was in a shaky house, which is a danger of falling. Uboy Lefanuya. He wanted to clear it out. He wanted to get the wine or the donkey out before the house falls, but he's afraid of going in there himself because it might collapse on him. So he brought the same Rav Adar Ba'Av into there, Mashche B'Shmaite, and he got him involved in a discussion in learning. Adapanye, meanwhile, while they're talking and learning, he cleared out whatever was in there. Bosa de Nafik, and after they left, Nafal Besa, the house fell down. Augish Rav Adar Ba'Av Ikbad. Rav Adar Ba'Av realized what just happened, and he was makbid. He was upset about it that they had used his schusim that they had relied on his schusim for that. Sovalaki Hodo Amar Rav Yanai, because why was he makbid if he in fact has that much schus? Because he held like what Rav Yanai says. That Rav Yanai says, La'olam al yamad odam makam sakana, a person should never stand in a dangerous place, v'yoma oisim li nest, and say that Hashem is going to do a nest for me. Shema ein oisim li nest, because Hashem may not do the nest for him. V'im tim t'loyma oisim li nest, and even if they do the nest for him, menakim lo mizchiyosev, they're going to subtract it from his chusim for olam haba, so Rav Adar Ba'Av didn't want that. So in the first case, they are fine. They're just passing by the wall. It's not so obvious. So some Mephoshim explain the difference is there, the Pashtus, the wall stayed standing afterwards. It had already been standing for 13 years. So the nest was not quite so overt, and therefore he didn't mind if he even realized. Here, where it was in a very overt nest, because the house collapsed as soon as they got out of it, then therefore Rav Adar Ba'Av was mounted on that. Omer of Chonon, Maikra, where is a pasuk that expresses that idea that a person might have his chusim subtracted as a result of a nest that was done for him? Yaakov says, I've become small from all the chesed and all the truth that you've done for me. In other words, that he's concerned that his chusim became smaller. Okay. My habit updated of Adar Ba'Av. What were of Adar Ba'Av's maisim that he had such tremendous schus that the other Amoroyim could rely on his schus to save them? So kihod de itmar, as in fact we have that there's a discussion on that point. Shala Talmidei v'Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira's Talmidim one time asked him, v'ami lo l'Rav Adaba Abba, or others say, they asked this Rav Adaba Abba, v'meh erach yamim, in what schus did you live so long? So he tells them, miyomai like padti b'seich beisi, I never was makbid, I never got angry in my house. So we said before he was makbid, that can mean that he objected to it, not that he got angry. It can mean that he was makbid, that he was concerned about it, or it can mean that he showed a little bit of akpada. What we're saying over here, like padti b'seich beisi, means I'm careful to not go beyond what you're supposed to. But like sa'adti b'fnei mishagodim imani, I never walked in front of somebody who's greater than me. But like here, howti b'mavoyis hamtunapos, I never thought of words of Torah in dirty alleys where there's human waste or animal waste that you can't, for example, say Krishna or think words of Torah over there. I never walked 4 amos without learning Torah or wearing tefillin. I never slept in the Beis Medrash, neither a long sleep nor even a nap. I was never happy when somebody else tripped up. Like sometimes you have, you know, a person makes a mistake or something and you have the choice and you have the chance. You know, let me jump in and correct. And then and you find some satisfaction in that. He never felt that way. I never called another person by hachinosi, or others say that he said bachanichosoi. A little different girsa on the side of here from the Aruch. So what does that mean? Rashi explains, bachanichosoi would be a nickname that other people call him. Goyis Habach also adds, we're talking about it, would be a derogatory nickname. So that would be Bachachinosei. I never called a person by such a name. Bachachinosei then would be, Bachachinosei rather would be a name that's hereditary in his family. So you may have a name like that, a derogatory name that's already hereditary in his family for several generations and other people, and therefore you would think he's maybe not so makbid. So still Rav Adaba Abba is saying, I wouldn't call him by such a name. Tosfos says that rather bachachinosei means not necessarily the gnai. It means, for example, that you have people have hereditary family names. Tosfos gives an example of Rabbi Avraham Evan Ezra. The Evan Ezra was originally from Spain. He traveled a lot around through a lot of Europe. At one point he came to France and met up with Rabbeinu Tam, and they became good friends. But you have to remember, in those times, Jews in France and in Germany didn't have hereditary last names. There was really no such thing as last names in those times. So when they needed an example of a last name that runs in a family, they had to use the example of Evan Ezra, where the name Evan Ezra literally means the son of Ezra. But it's like nowadays, you have people who are named Abramson or something. It doesn't mean their father was Abraham. It means that their ancestor was. So the same thing over here, you have a hereditary name. So in other words, Tosfos says, when you have a derogatory name like that, that's used as a last name for people, then Rav Adaba Abba was careful not to call people by that. As opposed to when it's a normal last name, then Tosfos says you'd be allowed to call them by their last name. Different other Mephoshim say that maybe not. Maybe what Rav Adaba Abba is saying is, you know, sometimes you call a person only by their last name, and it's like putting them down a little bit. Call them by their first name. It's more derech eretz. Now, all of these things, by the way, I mean, the Maharsha points out, all of these things are actually pretty serious averus. So why are we saying that about Adaba Abba's sources that he didn't do any of these things? So he says, okay, but the fact is, these are things that many people are careless about. So Rav Adaba Abba was exceptionally careful about them, therefore he was Zeicha Ta'arichos Yom. Different other explanation is that each of these things, for example, the loich padti, the seich beisi, the issue is you're not allowed to get really angry in your house. Lo ilamal yata odem, eima yaseir b'seich beisi, it says in Gittin. But a little bit of eima would be allowed. He was careful even about only a little bit. The same thing with all these other things, and the same thing with each of these other things that technically they might be mutter, but he was careful to avoid even the technicality of them. Further on this, talking about the good things that Chachamim did, Amalei Rover LaRachram BaPapa Lei Malon Mar Mahani Mili Malyasa to have a Ovid Rav Huna. So Rava asked Rachram BaPapa, "You were Talmud of, you were Ben Bias by Rav Huna. Tell me some of the good things, some of the special schosim that Rav Huna used to do." Amalei, he says, "Bian Kusei Lo Dechuna. What he did when he was younger, I don't remember. B'Sivusei Dechuna, but I remember, and I can tell you what he did when he was older." First of all, the whole Yom Ha'iva have a mafkin label, Gohauka Dadava. Every cloudy day, they would carry him around the city in a golden litter. So a guhalka, Rashi explains, is like a box attached to a wagon where like noble women sit in it, like a coach, basically. It's like a fancy coach. Rav Huna was very rich, so he had a golden coach. So he would go around, v'sayolah, kule masa, and he would go and inspect the entire city. V'chol ashisa dehava sriyosa, any wall that he saw was shaky and is in danger of falling, have a sasolah, he would have his people tear down that wall. Now, if the owner could afford it, bunny law, then the owner would rebuild the wall. The Eloy Epsher, and if the guy couldn't afford it, bunny law ihu mididay, then Rav Huna would have it rebuilt out of his own money. But this way, there wouldn't be shaky walls over there in the city that might collapse and kill or hurt people. Also, Rafram Bapapa continues, v'chopanya demalei shabsa, every Erev Shabbos afternoon, have a Meshadar Shlucha L'Shuka, he would send a messenger to the marketplace, v'chol yarka to have a Paya Shlucha L'Ginoi, any vegetables that the gardeners, that the vegetable sellers had left over, Zabinle, Rav Huna would have his people buy them, v'shodile l'nara, and he would throw them into the river. The point is, in other words, that he didn't want that the people should have leftover vegetables. And then they're going to think to themselves, you know what? I couldn't sell them. Then next week, I'm not going to bring as many. And then there's not going to be enough vegetables in the stores for people to be able to buy for Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, why throw them in the river? The lace for the aniyim, why not give the vegetables to poor people? The reason is because the Gemara says zimnin is samcha da'atayu, because it might happen the aniyim are going to get used to expecting those vegetables. But also the mizban, then they're not going to buy because they're going to figure we're going to get from Rav Huna before Shabbos. Meanwhile, it may happen one Shabbos that the sellers, that the storekeepers do sell their entire stock, and then there's nothing for Rav Huna to buy, and those poor people are not going to have vegetables for Shabbos. So therefore, he didn't want to give them, so they don't get used to waiting for him. Okay, the Gemara asks for the shadi lebehema. So why doesn't he give the vegetables to animals to eat? And the answer is kasava, because Rav Huna held, Michael Adam ain machil in the behema. You're not allowed to take food that could have been eaten by people and give it to animals. Now, not everybody agrees with that. The Magen Avraham, the Giri Nashas refers to, the Magen Avraham does bring that, lahalacha. However, not everybody agrees to that. And also the Matzah Shekel says over there that for one thing, if you don't have anything else easily available to feed the animal, then you're allowed to. And he says that's what the Minhag HaOlam is, that you do give human food to animals and you're not makbid on that because you don't always have what something else available. Okay, so the question is, v'loy lezabnik v'al. So why doesn't, so Rav Huna shouldn't buy the vegetables at all? What's the point of buying them then? And the answer, that's exactly that. You're going to be machshil the storekeepers in the future. Again, they're not going to bring in as many vegetables because they're going to figure last time we didn't sell all of them, and therefore we're going to bring in less. Meanwhile, there may be more demand for them the following Erev Shabbos, and then there's going to be a shortage, and Rav Huna didn't want that. He wanted that people should be able to buy as much as possible for Shabbos. Next, continues Rachman Bar Papa. Ki havelei milsa das vasa, when Rav Huna needed healing, when he had a doctor come to his house, have a molik kuzer de maya, he would fill up a jug of water, the tolile the sefer de besa, he would hang it by the threshold of the house, the omar, and he would say, call the boy, anybody who wants, leisiv lishko, come and take some of the water. Actually, Agoyes Habach takes out the word that not demaya, but minay. He would fill up a jar of whatever it was that the doctor had given him and put it on the door, so that way other people could take some of that medicine for themselves as well. The Ikadamri, others say milsa de shivsa have a gomir. Others say that the last one over there was Rav Huna was familiar with matters of shivsa, which is a type of shed that affects somebody who eats without washing their hands. So according to that, he would put a jug of water on his door, the dolly lay, and he would have it hanging high up. The Omar, and he would say, "Kol tzarich lay sivaleil." Anybody who needs to wash their hands, come in and wash their hands. Lay the stocking, so you don't get harmed by shivsa. So you wash your hands before you eat. And the last thing, ki have a korich rifta. When Rav Huna was wrapping bread, meaning when he was going to sit down to eat a meal, have a posach levave, he would open up his heart, or bave can also mean his door, he would open up his door, but Omar, and he said, kol man detzarech leisiv aleichu, anybody who needs, come and eat, like we say, I'm by that God, kol dichvin yeisiv aleichu. Omar Rava, so Rava comments on that when he hears this list of things that Rav Huna did. He says, kulu matzina makayamna, I would actually be able to be makayam all those things that Rav Huna did, levar meho, except for that last one, to be able to open the door and let everybody come in. I can't do that. Because you have a lot of bnei chela in mechoza. In Mechuza. Mechuza is the city where Mechuza, whatever, was the city where Rava was the Rav in Rosh Hashiva. So there's too many. Rashi says there's too many poor people in the city. So if I opened up the door to all of them, I'd have no money and no food left. The girsa that we have in front of us, Bnei Chela, means there were a lot of soldiers in Mechuza, and they would always be coming in and helping themselves to the food, and that I wouldn't be able to do. But everything else that Rehuna is doing, I would do as well. Okay. Shabbat, everyone.